So as we've been going through this series of shiurim, I've been keeping tracks to myself about my goal was to cover many of the different controversies throughout history and many of the different personalities throughout history and approach them from a biographical point of view and from a halachic point of view. Now there's one glaring, if a person goes through all, I'm probably the only one keeping track, but if a person goes through all the different tshuvas that we have learned together, so there's a glaring omission that we have personality that we haven't touched, and he was on my mind from the beginning that we should have discussed him. Really, a seminal figure in our recent history, certainly in the halachic process, and that is, anyone know? Rav Soloveitchik? No, not yet. No, we did Rav Kiviger. Rav Yitzchak Chanan. Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector we didn't discuss. Now, why didn't we discuss Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector? So, the truth is, I was caught in somewhat of a quandary. Why? Because Rav Yitzchak Chanan was known for his tshuvas about what topic? Agunas. Yitzchak Chanan was approached from throughout the, he was the Gadol Hador, so for many different types of shailos. But he took it upon himself to matir all the agunas in Klal Yisrael, as many as he possibly can. And I felt it wasn't appropriate to not do it if I'm going to discuss Yitzchak Chanan and one of his major impacts, so you have to discuss agunas. But we know discussing aguna, the topic is a tremendous type topic. It's both the breadth and the depth of the topic is tremendous, and I was honestly a little bit scared. I wasn't sure how I was going to present it, so I was going back and forth. But to present a different tshuva of his, I thought that wasn't worthwhile. So I wanted to discuss with Yitzchak Chanan. I didn't know how to do it. Yitzchak Chanan, just for an example, in his first set of tshuvas called Ein Yitzchak, he has over 70 tshuvas about agunas. It was said about Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan at his Masbid, Rav Zevin brings at his Hesbid, they said the pasuk from Shmuel Beis, Benois Yisrael El Shol Bechena. Now the children of Israel are going to cry. Why? Because until now we had someone to turn to matter all agunas. That was Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. So I wasn't sure what to do, and I let it linger. Then I was sitting this week trying to think of a nice topic for Parshas Noach. Most of the topics I like to discuss Parshas Noach we already discussed last week. What am I going to discuss? And I remember that someone had given me a sefer a number of years ago, a very interesting sefer written by a rabbi Goldhaber, and the sefer is two articles. One article is about the Spanish Inquisition. The other article, and the halachic ramifications, the other article is about the Titanic and all the halachic ramifications of the Titanic. Mishpatecha Tahom Rabba, he calls it. Ason ha-Titanic minikudas mabato shel ha-olam ha-Yehudi. The perspective from Jewish history, the perspective on the Titanic. So I started thinking, Mabel, Noach, Teva, and the Titanic, this would be a good week for me to discuss, to read the Sefer. I sat down, I read the Sefer, and there's really many fascinating things that I'd like to share with you this evening. Now, that being said, agunas is still a huge topic. No matter how much you cut it down, on true, the Simon of Agunas in Shulchan Aruch and Evin Ezer is Simon Yud Zayin. There are more tshuvas about Simon Yud Zayin than any other Simon in all of Shulchan Aruch. The Otzer HaPoskim, which is the seminal work on Evin HaEzer, and that section of Shulchan Aruch, many, many different volumes, has 6 volumes just on Simon Yud Zayin. This hit me when the normal way I prepare my shiurim is that I learn through the sugya, I collect all the makoros that I want to share with you. I usually take all the makoros, put it into one file. Usually after everything's there, it's around 10 pages, and then my job, the hardest part, is to cut it down to 2 or 3 pages. As you can see, I'm not so good at that. This time, I collected all the tshuvas that I wanted to, and it weren't so many tshuvas, it wasn't so much more. It was over close to 100 pages. That's how big the tshuvas are. We're talking about deep tshuvas, which really cross throughout Or Chaim, Choshen Mishpat, Evin Ezer, every part of Halacha, Chazakos, Rov, really, really deep, really dense sugyas. So, having said that, I understand that I'm jumping into something which perhaps is not so wise, and you'll guide me if I get too far along into it, but it certainly will not be a complete conversation after tonight. I hope that B'li Neder we could finish next time. If we can't finish next time, I may push for a third, but you'll be able to cast your vote around election day. I'll give you an option to cast your vote whether we should continue or whether we should go on. So having said that all, let's jump right into the sugya. But first we have to discuss the historical context. Now, I'm not just telling you the story of the Titanic because it's an interesting, tragic story. It's a story which all of you know. I'm sure all of you know it better than me. But the details which will affect halacha are not often things that we focus on. So I'm going to go through the story fairly quickly from this article from Wikipedia, but I'm going to pick out points which the halachic, the poskim are going to be discussing. Now this Sefer, Mishpatecha Tehom Rabbah, discussing all the different aspects of Yiddishkeit, of halacha, that came about because of the Titanic, is basically split into two sections. There's the section on Agunas, which we'll be focusing on, and there's the section on, which was probably more theoretical, I spent less time learning that part, because the rule in the Titanic, which we will discuss, when they realized that they're going down, what was the rule? Women and children first. And that ended up causing a big problem, because they ended up being less efficient than they could have been. They saved many, many fewer lives than they could have because of that system, and it's a system which has been reevaluated whether that should still be the protocol. But either way, does halacha recognize such a system? Does halacha agree with such a system? That's part of the Sefer. We're not going to be discussing that. The main part we're going to be discussing is the agunas, that the many agunas shailas came out of the story of the Titanic. And not every shipwreck is the same. Actually, every shipwreck is different. And even though throughout history there's been many different shipwrecks and many different agunas, Rachmana Litzlan, have been created because of shipwrecks, but you have to go into details of each story. So I want to discuss the details of this story. In the process, we'll take a quick look at the nature of the ship. So we know the Titanic was sunk around April 15th in the year 1912. It was a ship which was headed from England, Southampton, to New York City. How many passengers were on the Titanic? 2,224 passengers. Out of that, 1,500 of them died. Around 700 remained alive. 1,500 out of the over 2,000 were killed when the ship went under. The Titanic had a veteran captain. The Titanic was part of a much larger fleet. It was part of what was called the White Star Line, and it was part of a series of three ships. And the highest ranking captain, the White Star Line's highest captain, that was in charge. He was the one running. He was killed in the accident, but it wasn't because it was an amateur. That is for sure. He was their greatest captain. On the ship, there was a swath of the population. There was very, very wealthy people, extremely wealthy people, extremely wealthy non-Jews, extremely wealthy Jews. We had Strauss, who owned Macy's, was on the Titanic, and you had not such wealthy. You didn't have anyone who was really, really poor. To get on, even in the third class, you had to have some, you had to pay for a nice ticket, but it wasn't necessarily only for the wealthy. There were definitely very many, many middle class on the ship, which also we will come back to. Now, the Titanic had, being that it was the ship, it was a premier ship, it had tremendous amount of safety features, which is interesting. Although the Titanic had advanced safety features, such as watertight compartments and remotely activated watertight doors, there were not enough lifeboats to accommodate all of those aboard due to the outdated maritime safety regulations. Basically, they didn't really think that this was going down. And this is something you see throughout all the articles, whether it be the Sefer that I read or the academic article, everything that's been written on this basically says it didn't even dawn on anyone that this was a possibility. So, yeah, we don't have enough ships in case of something happened, okay? This ship is not going down. This is the largest ship. There's no possibility it's going down. We have all these features. Ad kidei kach, that the people that were running a ship didn't even really know the protocol. They didn't really know how to get people into those life-saving boats because it didn't even dawn on anyone that there's a possibility of an accident here. And that really teaches us a lesson in history that many, many more people could have been saved. They didn't know how many people could fit in one of the small boats. So it was time to fill up the boats. They didn't know how many people could do. So they could have saved perhaps even double the amount of people if they just would have known what they were doing. But they were ill-prepared. They weren't prepared for what was going to be. And that's why it was such a tragic, tragic end. Okay, so how big was the Titanic? Titanic was 882 feet and 9 inches, which compares to Noach Teva, much larger than Noach Teva. Noach Teva, after all the calculations, depends how you calculate, but around over 500 feet, but not close to 888. It was 92 feet in breadth, 6 inches, and the height was 104 feet. feet. It had not three levels like Noah's Teva, but it had 10 levels. That's how many floors were on this. It had a real, on Titanic, really a huge ship. And as I mentioned before, the safety features on the Titanic were unparalleled. The emergency features, again, unparalleled. Everything was on this. They had watertight, they had a mechanism that was watertight that even if part of the ship would break off, the other part would still be almost like a ship within a ship. Really, every precaution was taken. And the feeling going onto the boat, as is a quote from many of the survivors, this is a quote, "At once lose the feeling that we are on board a ship and instead seem instead to be entering the hull of some great house on shore." They didn't seem like they were on a boat. There was a library on the boat. There was a barbershop, a swimming pool, a gymnasium, a squash court, a Turkish bath, an electric bath, all sorts of things. It was really Gan Eden. It was nothing could be better. You're on the ship. You had everything that you possibly could need. How long did it take to build the Titanic? Noah's Teva built 120 years, right? How long did it take to build the Titanic? 26 months. So bigger, took much less time. Many safety features.
We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but we assume that God helped Noah a little bit. Well, he wanted it to take a long time. Anyways, interesting contrast. Obviously, we can't compare, but just so that it makes me feel good that this has to do with the Parsha, that's why I'm drawing these contrasts. Many different people, like we mentioned, there was wealthy people, poor people, every part of society was on this ship. Now let's discuss the actual process of the sinking, which will have to do with the tshuvas that are penned about the agunos, which were tragically born out of this situation. At 11:40 p.m. on April 14th, lookout Frederick Fleet spotted an iceberg immediately ahead of the Titanic and alerted the bridge. First officer William Murdoch ordered the ship to be steered around the obstacle and engines to be put in reverse. But it was too late. The starboard side of the Titanic struck the iceberg, creating a series of holes below the waterline. Now, they were warned before, in the night before, they were warned that there are many icebergs, there's a lot of ice coming, be careful. But what was the mentality again? Nevertheless, the ship continued to steam full speed, which was standard practice at the time. Although the ship was not trying to set a speed record, timekeeping was very important. And under prevailing practices, ships were often operated at close to full speed, with ice warnings seen as advisories and reliance placed upon lookouts and the watch of the bridge. It was generally believed that the ice posed little dangers to large vessels like the Titanic. So close calls with ice were not uncommon, and even head-on collision had not been disastrous. So they weren't so concerned. They knew the ice was coming, but they thought a big ship with the Titanic, what could possibly happen? And we know once it strikes, five of the ship's watertight compartments, which they were all relying on to save them, were breached. It soon became clear that the ship was doomed, as she could not survive more than four compartments being flooded. Titanic began sinking bow first, with the water spilling from compartment to compartment at her angle in the water as her angle in the water became steeper and the boat was almost vertical. Those aboard the Titanic were ill prepared for such an emergency. In accordance with accepted practices of the time, where ships were seen as largely unsinkable, lifeboats were intended to transfer passengers to nearby rescue vessels. Titanic only had enough lifeboats to carry about half of those on board. If the ship had carried her full complement of about 3,000 passengers and crew, only about a third could have been accommodated in the lifeboats. The crew had not been trained adequately in carrying out the evacuation. The officers did not know how many they could safely put aboard the lifeboats and launched many of them barely half full. Third-class passengers were largely left to fend for themselves, causing many of them to become trapped below decks as the ship filled with water. The women and children first protocol was generally followed when loading the lifeboats, and most of the male passengers and crew were left aboard. At 2:20 a.m., 2 hours and 40 minutes after the Titanic struck the iceberg, her rate of sinking suddenly increased as her forward deck dipped underwater, and the sea poured through the open hatches and grates. Now, this is very important to keep in mind with halacha. The water started coming into the boat. We'll see why that plays a major role. As her unsupported stern rose out of the water, exposing the propellers, the ship began to break into two between the third and fourth funnels due to the immense strain on the keel. Also very important in halacha. First of all, water comes into the boat seems to be splitting. There's a difference in halacha between a boat which goes under whole and a boat which is broken apart at sea. Over here, the historians are clearly telling us that the boat was broken apart. This was not known, however, for around 70 years till they found the boat underneath and they realized that it had cracked in the middle. They had thought It's impossible such a big boat could crack. It must have gone down as one hole. With the bow underwater and air trapped in the stern remained afloat for a few minutes longer, rising to a nearly vertical angle with hundreds of people still clinging to it. Imagine the height of the ship before plunging into the murky depths. For many years, it was generally believed, as I mentioned before, the ship sank in one piece. However, when the wreck was located many years later, it was discovered that the ship had fully broken into two. So two important details when it comes to halacha. The water came into the boat. It's not that the boat just sank straight down, and the boat seemed to have broken into two. All remaining passengers and crew were immersed into the lethally cold water with a temperature of 28 degrees Fahrenheit, -2 Celsius. Almost all of those in the water, also very important lahalacha. So they drown. Now what happens once they're in the water? Even theoretically they don't drown. So the doctors tell us almost all of those in the water died of cardiac arrest or other bodily reactions to freezing water within 15 to 30 minutes. So the natural reaction for a person to be thrown into this water. Forget even being able, the fact that you're in the middle of the ocean and how you're going to get out of that, which is something obviously someone who approaches in a good neshayla has to deal with. The very contact with that water for 15 to 30 minutes would kill you also, which is going to be a very important factor. Only 13 of them were helped into the lifeboats, though these had room for 500 more people. 500 more people could have been saved if they would have known the proper protocol. Of course, distress signals were sent, but wireless, rockets, and lamp, but none of the ships were responded were near enough to reach the Titanic before the sinking. A radio operator on board the Burma, for instance, estimated that it would take till 6 a.m., now we're talking about 2 a.m., it would take her to 6 a.m. before the liner could arrive at the scene. Meanwhile, eventually a boat comes to take those that were on the lifeboats and they bring them, the Carpathia, I think it's called, and they bring them to New York. So this is the tragic story of the Titanic. Obviously, a story which has been at the center, still something which people are amazed by, people constantly learning, studying, and restudying, and most of the protocol which remains in place, even nowadays, for these type of ships is because of this tremendous disaster. But normally we view this as a part in history, not necessarily a part in Jewish history. But it's important to keep in mind that there were many Jews amongst the boat, on the boat. Not only were there Jews on the boat, there seemed to have been many from Jews upon board. I learned through my research preparing for this year, there was a kosher kitchen on the Titanic. You could even see that they have some forks and knives that say milchiks and fleishiks. On the Titanic, there's a menu that they have that says on the bottom of the menu, kosher meat supplied and cooked for Jewish passengers as desired. They had a mashkiach on the Titanic with a kosher, separate kosher cook. So there were a significant amount of from Jews on the boat. We knew that there are many Jews. How many were from, we have no idea, but enough that there was a need for a kosher kitchen. And then, unfortunately, there are many, many sad, tragic stories, which leads to the shilas that we are going to be discussing in the remaining time and hopefully next week. Just one tragic story. First of all, he brings a sad story over here from a man named HaYehudi Shimon Meisner, who was 34 years old, and he was trying to escape Russia. And he gets to England, and he comes to a relative of his, and he buys a ticket to go on the Philadelphia back to America. She says, you know what, let me be nice to you. Philadelphia is not a nice, not luxury boat. I could afford to get you at least into the third rank of the Titanic. She says, I'm nervous about Philadelphia. It could go under. It's not so safe. Let me send you on the Titanic. He Kartes Lania Cheres of Philadelphia. Originally supposed to go on the Philadelphia. Rak Be'ikvo Shvisa Sifke Hapacha. She was concerned about the security. Lochein Hemires Kartesi Le Titanic. She switched to the Titanic. And this was another case, another tragic story of an Aguna, which we will be discussing. Mr. Seif, Yossi Seif, called me today. He saw I was giving the shiur. He told me, you should know, that my grandfather was scheduled, he was escaping Poland, and he was in England. He had a ticket to go on to the Titanic, and he got there, and they turned him away because he had lice. They were nervous that the lice would spread, and then he had to go on a different ship to New York. So he brings many stories like that as well. But there were many, it was an option for people that were trying to escape Europe to go to New York. This was and that's how we see that there are many from Jews on the boat. So let's jump into the halachic aspects of the sugya. in general, we have to know how to approach a shaila of an aguna. An aguna was always viewed as a tragic reality in halacha, a tragic reality in the halachic process in Jewish society, and it was always viewed as a goal of the rabbanim. If there was a way to come to a conclusion to matter an aguna, it was a serious shaila. We're talking about an iser of Eishes Ish, but it's something which the Rabbanim, as you could see from the literature, spent a tremendous amount of time. They viewed it as a mitzvah to matir agunas. Now, most of the agunas historically are stories like the Titanic, stories where we don't know the husband went out to war, we don't know what happened to him. More recently, most stories of agunas we know tragically are stories where we know the husband is. That's not the issue. In fact, I think it was the RCA that put out a pamphlet about agunas, and they basically said that the old type of aguna, the subject of agunas has totally changed. The old type of aguna is no longer. Until Rachmana Litzlon, we saw when 9/11, the shaila was again brought up, and many of the shailas, the tshuvas, which we will be discussing in this year, will be brought up in the conversation of 9/11 as well. So let's just take a look at how serious of an issue trying to matter an aguna is. Take a look at Maror Makom number 1, where the Bach says as follows: V'hine chas v'shalom al techashvu li legaiva shehechnasi roshi bidvarim elu. The Bach tries to matter an aguna, and he says, "Don't think that I'm being haughty and I'm getting involved in something which is beyond my pay scale. No, ta'aminu li, believe me, v'nikilosi od mizeh." Lahatir bechina ketana shebechinas haaguna haelyoina asher alzen nemar amar Shlomo reisi dimas haashukim. This is what Shlomo HaMelech was talking about when she sees the cry of the ashukim, of those poor people. What's he talking about? The cry of the aguna, the person who's trapped, she can't get married. Ve'ein lahem menachim b'chol mi shematir aguna, says the Bach. V'chol mi shematir aguna achas bizman ki ilu bona achas michurvas Yerushalayim ha'alyon. He equates it, mattering in aguna, appropriately, alpidin, ki ilu bona achas michurva shel Yerushalayim. What were the reasons, why is it such a serious thing? So obviously, of course, to save the person's life, to let her go on with her life, to be able to free her so she could rebuild again. But another part, another aspect which the poskim do discuss, take a look at in the tshuva of Rebbe Leo Mizrachi and Maror Makom number 2, is that there's also a concern that, again, a woman who's living alone, and it's unfair, we're expecting her to live alone for the rest of her life, and there's a concern of a person going out and getting married without the heter, and living with someone without the heter, which is certainly not something that we want to happen. Take a look at Maror Makom number 2. He says, even though there are many poskim which would be machmer in this situation, since there are those that will be mekel, this is not a time to tap on chumras. There are times for chumras, there are times for kulas. Says Rav Elio Mizrahi, ve'ein in the bold face, ve'ein l'choshas hadchak yoser mizeh. There's no greater shas hadchak from this. If she remains in aguna her entire life, you're just asking for trouble. Don't take this lightly. Do what you can. Again, alpidin. But this is an area in halacha which we try to matter agunas, as we saw from Rav Yisrael Chanan. We do our best alpidin to find heterim, find kulas for the aguna to be able to remarry. So let's discuss the halachic aspects. We see that there's very big inyan, there's a very big need to matir the aguna. So what do we have to tackle? What does a poisek have to tackle when approaching a shail of aguna? A person comes, Rachmana Litzlan, a woman comes, says, my husband went on a ship, the ship sank, haven't heard of my husband since, I want to get remarried. So what does he have to look at? What's the question that he has to address? So let's try to do this in an organized fashion. The first question that a poisek has to address is, we're talking about someone who is theoretically an Eishes Ish. She's theoretically a married woman, right? Is she someone who we think on a deraisa level is an Eishes Ish? Or is this a chumra midrabanan that we're extra machmir not to get married? That's the first question he has to deal with. We have to know, are we dealing with a daraisa or a derabanan? So first things first, a woman comes and we know that she was married. And she comes, she says, I think my husband died. So as far as we know, she's alive. We have no proof, but he's alive. We have no proof that the husband died, so we have to assume she's an Eishes Ish Midaraisa. It's a Suffolk. At the most, it's a Suffolk Midaraisa. Suffolk Midaraisa, we would have to be Machmer, and there's really no way to get around that. What are the ways to knock this down to Derabanan and say, we don't have to assume that he's still alive? On a Deraisa level, we could be comfortable saying that he is no longer alive, you are good to go get married. Perhaps Midarabanan, they were extra machmir. But on a Deraisa level, we really have no concern that your husband is still alive. So what are the factors? What is enough of an indication that she is no longer considered an Eishes Ish on a Deraisa level? So for this, we take a look at the Gemara in Maseches Gittin, Bar Mokka number 3, where the Mishnah tells us as follows. Shlosha Dvarim Amr Reb Elazar Bar Parta Lefnei Chachamim. Three chidushim of Elazar Bar Parta said in front of the Chacham, Vikimu as Devarav, and they agreed to him. Va'al hasvina hamiturefes bayam, a svina which is being torn apart at sea. Shehein becheskas kayamin. We still assume that the people on board are still alive. We don't necessarily have the right to assume that they died. Usvina sha'avda bayam. But what about a svina which is totally lost? It totally disappeared. We have no idea what happened to it. Says the Gemara, it still has the status of a suffix. Nosnin aleihem chumre chayim v'chumre mesim. You have to be machmir both ways. Assume that the husband is still alive, and assume that the husband is dead, both the chumra. So she can't get remarried on a deraisa level. And she also, if she was married to a kohen, she can't eat truma, because you have to assume that he's both alive and dead at the same time on a deraisa level. So seemingly, there's a chash midaraisa here. Chazal have not given us an out to say, and no, midaraisa, you could assume that he died. There's no reason to assume he died. If we don't have proof that he died, we go with the chazaka, he is still alive. Comes the Rambam and Perish and Mishnah and gives us a little bit of an out. Maramakim number 4, the Rambam says, Usvina she'avda bayam, a boat that gets lost at sea. What does this mean, a boat that gets lost at sea? He shenishperu machshireha ve'avdu. The boat, the vessel itself, the parts of the vessel which help guide it, are broken. They are nishperu ve'avdu, and they get lost. Ve'nishara hasvina apnei hamayim. But the boat still remains on the water. It's still floating. Mesura lemahale chamayim is continuing to go. Ve'lo nishar ogin ve'lo meshutos kidei lechavna behen v'chol zeh dvarim nechon. Says the Rambam, what does the Mishnah mean when it says that even if the boat is lost, you still have to be machmir that he's still alive? That's when you see the boat is still on the ocean. Yeah, it may have broken, they don't have the proper steering, but we don't know what's going to happen to that boat. It's still sailing, it's not sinking. Who knows where it could be? But if you actually see that the boat was ripped apart and that it sank, perhaps then you don't have to be machmir. This is what many are medayik from the Rambam, that if you see the boat was ripped apart, that's enough at least on a deraisa level to say you don't have to assume that the husband is still alive. However, the Rashba disagrees with this. Take a look in the tshuvas of the Rashba, Maramakam number 5, in the bold face, towards the bottom, where the Rashba says as follows. Vim eno meyer ela shenishbera svina bovad ze eno klum. Va'afilu nisei steitzi, says the Rashba, if all you could testify to is that the boat was broken and smashed apart and that it sank, but you didn't see any person drowning, I can't come and testify to this woman, I saw your husband drowning. All I saw is that the boat sank, so she is still considered to be an Eishes Ish Midaraisa. We have not enough reason to believe that the husband died in the process. So the Rambam tells us that if the boat broke and sank, we could assume that the husband died on a deraisa level. And the Rashba says, no, you can't assume that the husband died, even if the boat is broken. You see the boat at the bottom of the water, there's no reason yet to believe that the husband died. Maybe he swam to shore, who knows what happened to him. She's still bechezgas Eishes Ish Midaraisa, and she cannot get married. Kishema notzel agabe eitz akora. Maybe there is a piece of wood from the boat floating around. He grabbed onto it, and he was able to be saved. Kederach shenitzolin harbe pa'amim, and we've seen this many times. So machlok is between the Rambam and the Rashba on a deraisa level. If the ship is broken apart, as was the case in the Titanic, is she still a chash suffig eishes ish midaraisa? The Rashba says, yes, she's still an eishes ish midaraisa, and there's nothing to work with. Take a look at Maramakum number 6, where the Radvaz, one of the late Gedole Rishonim agrees with the Rashba, and he says, I'm not even convinced that the Rambam meant to disagree. Who knows? It was a comment of the Rambam in Perish HaMishnah. It's not in Yad HaChazaka. Who knows if the Rashba meant to, if the Rambam meant to disagree? Says the Radvaz, we have to assume like the Rashba. And even if the boat is broken, so long as we have not seen that the husband himself drowned, or we saw that there was a shipwreck, you have to assume on a Daraisa level that he is still alive. Until comes Rabbi Akiva Eger. Comes Rabbi Akiva Eger and says, perhaps we could find a kula, at least on a Daraisa level, to assume that the husband is no longer alive. Why? The Gemara seems to say explicitly, even if the ship is wrecked, the ship's at the bottom of the ocean, the Mishnah says, I have to assume he's alive. What's Rabbi Akiva Eger's reasoning? Take a look at Mar Makom number 8. Rabbi Akiva Eger argues as follows. D'yesh lomar, d'mayri b'nitva b'emtza hamayim rachok mi'abosha. Be'inyan d'besoch shir k'dei sh'teitzi nafsho, i'efshar lo lalos li'abosha, u'b'chi ha'gavna having milsa k'mosho ash'teitzi nafsho. Explains Rabbi Akiva Eger, the facts have changed, the mitzias has changed since the times of Chazal. And this is well documented. Times of Chazal, they always, the ships were always close by to the shore, at least closer to them when they go nowadays. Therefore, there was always a concern. Even if you saw a shipwreck, who knows if the husband was able to make it to shore? You cannot assume that he died. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, nowadays that the ships don't travel on the side near the banks, near the land, but they travel in the middle. If the ship is wrecked, and there's no possible way that the husband in the middle of the ocean is making it to shore. The husband is going to be able to last in that water. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, at least on a Daraisa level, we could ignore the Mishnah in Gittin. And if there is a shipwreck, we do not have to assume that the husband is still alive. So on a Daraisa level, we've basically taken care of it. You take a look in Mar Makom number line, the Pisrei Tshuva quotes this Rabbi Akiva Eger. He quotes the Nesivus, which has a similar Svara, that our practices, our procedure of traveling in boats has changed. It used to be near the shore, therefore there was a concern on a Daraisa level, the husband made it back to shore. Nowadays, there's no concern on a Daraisa level that the husband was able to make it back to shore. If you see a shipwreck, you see a Titanic on the bottom of the ocean on a Daraisa level and you don't know what happened to the husband, Daraisa level, you could assume that the husband passed away and the woman could get remarried. But this is all on a Daraisa level. Comes the Gemara in Meseches Yevamos and says, not so quickly. Very good, there's a shipwreck. On a Daraisa level, we could assume that the husband died. Take a look at the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Kuf Chof Aleph Amad Aleph, Mar Makom number 10, and this is what most of the tshuvas of Agunas, most of what we will be discussing, revolves around this Gemara. It's important to pay attention to every nuance and detail in this Gemara, Meseches Yevamos. Says the Gemara, Mishnah, Nofal Amayim, a person fell into the water. Bein sheyesh lahem sof, bein sheim lahem sof, ishto asura. Water, a person falls into the ocean, or falls into a body of water, bein she'ein lahem sof, whether they have a sof or they don't have a sof. What does it mean, whether water has a sof or not a sof? Take a look at Rashi, Mar Malkum number 12. Mayim she'ein lahem sof, mifarish b'perek basra, kol she'omed ve'eino roa me'arba ruchosof. So, bodies of water are split into two different types in halacha. There are bodies of water where you're able to see the circumference of the lake from all four sides. Therefore, if I'm looking at this ocean, I'm looking at this lake rather, I could see from around it in every single direction. That means that if the husband were to make it out, I would have seen that he came out. So therefore, ishto muteris. But if it's mayim she'ein lahem sof, water that I can't see the end, I can't see every shore of the water, it's mayim she'ein lahem sof. So just because I didn't see the husband get out and climb onto the yabasha, climb onto the land, that doesn't mean that he didn't make it out. Perhaps he didn't make it out, I just didn't see where he made it out. I can't see the other end of the ocean. But the Mishnah says it doesn't make a difference either way, ishto asura. Take a look at the Gemara. Tan rabbana nafal amayim, a person falls into water. Bein sheyesh lahem sof, whether you could see its circumference, the shore around it, bein sheein lahem sof, or whether it goes all the way to the horizon, you can't see the end of it, Ishto Asura. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim mayim sheyesh lahem sov, ishto muteres. Now come chachomim with a tremendous kula. If it's a lake, you could see the yabasha, you could see the dry land, the entire circumference of the body of water. You know that this man did not come out. If he would have come out, I would have seen him come out. Therefore, we could say, ishto muteres. She'ein lahem sov, but if you can't see the end of the water, ishto asura, you have to assume that she is asura. What does this mean? Even though we've established that on a deraisa level, we could be makel and assume that the husband died, we're not nervous about the Gemara and Gittin, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, still, and the ship was entirely wrecked, says the Gemara, still, you don't know what happened to this guy, unless you saw he himself drown and die. Obviously, then you could testify. But if we don't know what happened to this guy, we saw the Titanic on the bottom of the ocean, Midir Abanan, we are still machmer, even though the vast majority of people, seemingly, would not make it out, and probably died. Al Pirov, there's a good assumption to assume that, good reason to assume that he died. Still, Midir Abanan. They come and they say, nope, you have to assume that he's still alive. She's still an Esishist. Let's take a look at the Gemara.
How can you make it across the ocean? It's impossible.
Who says across the water? She doesn't know. He doesn't know where he came from.
The middle of the ocean.
Well, maybe he took a piece of wood and made it to another boat, and that boat picked him up and brought him to that. Who knows what happened? Says the Gemara. Take a look at the Gemara. Hechi dami mayim sheyesh lahem sof. What does this mean, mayim sheyesh lahem sof, where you see the circumference? Amar Abaye, kolsha ome viroa me'arba ruchosav. Anywhere you can see the circumference of the water, that's mayim sheyesh lahem sof. Amar Avashi. Hodu amar Abonin. Mayim sheyesh lahem sof ishto asuru. This din der Abonin, this chumra midir Abonin, that a woman who is married to a man who fell into the ocean, that she can't get married, pay attention carefully, this will be very important. Hani mili beinish the ama. That's talking about a regular person. Aval tsur ba mirabanan. But a famous person, one of the gedolei hadora, Talmud Chacham, lo, then he could, his wife could get remarried. Why? The isalek kala isle. If he would have made it out, they would have sent signs around all the Jewish community. This person, a nace happened to him. He was sigh. Everyone would know he's around. Why didn't they tell us? Why didn't someone tell us? Why is there no call that this person's alive? If he's such a famous person, it must be that he didn't come out anywhere, and therefore the person, the woman, could get remarried. But says the Gemara, no, we don't buy what Ravashi has to say. Velohi, it proves to be incorrect. Loishna inish the alma, veloishna tsur b'mirabana. It doesn't matter what type of person. The woman cannot get remarried even if there was a shipwreck. Says the Gemara, very important. The other din, this entire din, is only b'diyevet. Lichatchila lo. But lichatchila, she can't get married. Lichatchila, she can't get married. But b'diyevet, let's say she comes and she did get married, do we have to force her to get divorced? Says the Gemara, no. So what do we have here? Let's just be clear. Midaraisa, there is a shipwreck. For whatever reason, we don't have to assume she's an ishishish. Come to the Chachamim and say, Midir Abanan, if it's Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof, and you can't see the end of the water, you have to assume that he escaped. But this Chumra Midir Abanan is only Lechatchila. Let's say she doesn't know that, and she goes and gets married, do we have to force her to get divorced? Come to the Chumra Abanan and say, no, it's only Chumra Midir Abanan. If she got married, we could let her stay married, she does not have to get divorced. Tanya, Amar Rebbe, Maisa b'shnei b'nei Adam. There's a story of two people. Mechamer mechorim b'yarden. They're going fishing. V'nichnas echad mehem l'mechila shel dagim. A little pool where they had the fish. Ushaka chama. The sun sets. V'lo ra'a pisla shel mechila. He doesn't realize that he's about to step into the body of water. V'shaa chaveira k'dei she'teten ashton. His friend's waiting there. When's he going to come up? It can't possibly be that he stayed alive so long b'pisla shel mechila in this body of water. She goes to tell his wife, you know, your husband died. I was fishing today with him. He fell in the water. He didn't come out. He's dead. So, l'machar zarcha chama, v'hikir pischa shel mechila. The next day, the sun gets up. This guy finally makes his way out of this body of water. Ubao matza hesped gadol b'soich beso. And he sees that there's a big eulogy. They're sitting shiva in his house. What's going to be? Why are they sitting shiver? Amr Rebbe, kama gedolim, divei chachamim, sha'amru, mayim sheyesh lahem sof, ishta muteres, she'ein lahem sof, ishta suru. This is why, if you could see for fact that the guy didn't come out, she could get remarried. But if you can't see for a fact that the guy himself drowned and that he didn't come out, it could be that he came out and he didn't see. It's Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof, says the Gemara, we are Machmir Midrabanan, at least Lechat Chila. Let's finish off the Gemara. She'ein Lahem Sof, Ish Tasura, Ihachi Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof, Nami Lechash L'Mechila Shel Dogim. So then we should always, even in a small body of water like a lake, why aren't we nervous that she found himself in a mechila shel dagim and he'll be able to remain there overnight and perhaps he'll come out like this story? Mayim sheyesh lahem sof mechila shel dagim lo shchicha. It's not common that this type of place exists within a mayim sheyesh lahem sof, so we don't have to be concerned that he was staying hiding out in a mechila shel dagim and then he's going to come back tomorrow. So the basic sugya is as follows, and with this we will end off, we'll pick up next time. Basically, a person comes, Rachmana Litzlan, a wife comes and says, my husband was on the Titanic. So the first question the Pesach asks, is she an Eishes Ish Midaraisa? So Rabbi Kiva Eger says, no, since the Titanic was flowing in the middle of the ocean, it wasn't near any body of land, Midaraisa, it's very, very unlikely that the guy survived, and therefore on a Daraisa level, she is Muteris to get remarried. Come the Chachamim in Meseches Yivamos and say, but if you didn't see he himself drown, and you didn't see that he really died, all you know is that Titanic's on the bottom, but you don't know what happened to him, and you can't see for sure that he didn't come out, perhaps he did come out somewhere, so Midr Abanan, you still have to be Machmir. Midr Abanan, you have to be Machmir. If she gets remarried, we let her stay married, but if she's coming to ask, could I get remarried now, the answer still has to be no, and therefore the Rabbanim have their work cut out for them. How could we matter this woman if at the end of the day the Titanic is riding on Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof and there was very little testimony as to who in particular died and drowned? So how do we know the guy didn't make it out somewhere and decided, you know what, I'm going to just live my life out over here? What other halachic ways do we have to matter this woman even though the person seemed to have drowned in Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof, which would be usher for her to get remarried on a derabbanan level? Bli neder, to be continued.